Chapter 8. There was one place, a fortress, impregnable, a byword for futility, Coryza. The land was a melange of fecund marsh and rotting wood, an endless landscape of lumpen hills where blind and toothless folk reared leeches and maggots and gave praise for their good fortune to the god of all flies. The vast expanse of territories extended from the river Drell and the lands contested by the storm claimed to the north to the groves of the gulchwood Silverneth in the south. Even in Briomdar's halcyon era, the glory days of the Ionrach heroes, no Archelian had dared set foot on its shores. Carivinia the Great, the gulch empress of Coryza, had once claimed dominion over the entire coast. Only such scions of revilement as Torglug, Morbidex, Cankerwall, or the brothers Glot could claim higher favour, and the land itself had blessed her rule with degradation. Even after 2 centuries of decline, the capital of her former domain was a thing of magnificent virulence. The emerald-green oceans of Gyron were brown and sludgy by the time they met Coryza's shores, no longer verdant water but an excremental filth that tarred the object of their affections black. Decrepit-looking seabirds pecked at the rocks and cawed, flightless and blind, their feathers diseased, bills and feet blighted with mutation and abscesses. Flies boiled across the sky, horizon to horizon, the way the leaden seas of Cayman might look from above. They flexed, bulged, rippled with peristaltic motions, as though this part of Gyron had been swallowed by the grandfather himself, and this was the gorge that awaited the entirety of the realm sphere in time. Lurien felt a tingle of excitement as he emerged from the water, closing his eyes to listen to the oily crunch of virgin gravel under his boot. Vanglire had never dared strike against the Gulch Empress. He would be the first. Clambering up onto the bluffs for a better view, he wrinkled his nose against the fetid breeze. The Empress's squalid burg festered at the sheltered end of the bay. Their very buildings wriggled with maggots and worms, squatting behind thick walls. Bell towers, spaced unevenly throughout the city, spilled out a dissonance of despair, while the chittering of vermin, the coughs and moans of the diseased, the wails of the mad and the squelch of filth all combined was a faithless mockery of how a living city should sound. A scabrous tangle of pontoons, crafted from the bloated corpses of plague victims, filled the harbour. Bilge ships groaned in their berths and playfully slapped each other with filth. The obese warships were icons of faith and madness, temples to Nurgle erected by shipwright prophets whose sanity had been eviscerated by disease. Diminished she may have been, but the whisper amongst the raiding Archelian was that Carivinia's star was again in the ascendant, answering now to the summons of Archaon himself. It was at his order, it was rumoured, that the Gulch Empress cast those ships in search of the Iduneth, for their souls had been claimed in ages past by the Dark Prince. Another reason for the Iduneth to dread the name Coryza.
"You are unusually quiet, Namariel."
The Nathir scrambled easily up the tarred rocks of the bluff to stand beside him. The wind poured at her clothing, and her face had already become sheened by a greasy substance that Lurien did not want to be identified. Finding a spot to sit, she quickly strung her bow stave as she gazed sightlessly over the bay.
"Coryza," she said simply.
"I wonder why they call Carivinia the Great," said Eodren.
The Briomdane Archelian had remained at the foot of the bluffs, where the waves slapped against the shore and oozed into the gaps between the rocks. He was scrubbing the back of his gauntlets, trying to cleanse them in the pure water of Filinduil's ether sea.
"Since Sigmar returned and the Ever Queen was roused, her holdings have shrunk 100-fold in as many years."
It sounded as though Éodrin were trying to reassure himself. It did not seem to be working.
"It gladdens me to see you taking our quest seriously, my love," said Namariel. "I can only admire the scale of your ambition, but I will not be queen to a corpse in the Gulch Empress's jetty."
The survivors of Niel's phalanx mustered on the beach behind him as they climbed out of the water. A handful of Ishlen guard even fewer of the Morsar. Tidecaster Felenduel, Soulrender Kalar. The Alopex knight, sneering over his diminished kin with the glittering arrogance of an Elgonite Archelian. In addition to the true-souled warriors, the Namatai battalion numbered about 100, including the familiar faces of Ureel and Moragai. Lurien nodded to them, but it appeared as though the pair had been instructed to ignore him. He had wondered why they had not been properly assigned to the battalion for the raid on the Asurian Cape. Moragai in particular was the most frighteningly efficient killer he'd ever come across. Namariel had answered that fighting in a battle demanded a very different set of skills to murdering Archelian in the streets. The warriors milled together uncertainly in the small bubble of ether sea. This was not the overwhelming hit-and-run onslaught that the Idoneth codes of war vouchsafed and that the Elgonite knights were accustomed to. Gathering themselves up on a beach several miles from their target clearly sat uncomfortably with them. If the notion of striking at the most powerful single force in the gulch with half of an already small phalanx appealed to them any more, no one was saying so.
"Second thoughts, cousin," said Niel.
The White Prince had been amongst the last group to emerge from the sea, as befit his rank, leaving his Fangmora in the care of his Namatai to climb the bluffs further along the bay. He stood there, framed by the cesspool city of Nurgle, arms crossed, his fine armour of pearl and gold smeared with filth, his bronze cloak fluttering in the fetid breeze.
"Just savouring the moment," said Lurien.
Niel nodded.
"Forevermore I will be remembered as the first of our kind to lead a raid into Coriza."
Lurien frowned. He had been under the impression that he was the first into Coriza. The plan had been his, after all. He had naturally assumed that the acclaim would be as well. Niel let out his held breath and grinned. His face flushed a pallid green.
"Let us do this mad thing."
Lurien smothered the woman's voice with his hand as his boot knife went into her back. Her chest hitched, but a lifetime of sickness had left her frail, and the small sigh she let out sounded almost like gratitude. Lurien eased her to the ground as Kalar approached. The ether sea that her enchanted accoutrements generated about her sheathed the Soulrender in a shimmering green bubble, warring constantly with the vile taint of Coriza. It was enough to provide clean water for her to breathe, but not for her to swim. Now she was forced to walk. Her every movement spoke of exhaustion as she pressed the lure light of her talon hook to the dying woman's brow and drained her. Shrouding the glowing orb with a dark cloth provided from Morogai's growing collection of seamstressing materials, Kalar nodded to him that it was done. Lurien threw a gesture into the noxious haze clogging the alley behind him, and Niel, Éodrin, and Felenduel hurried up to join him. Namariel was last, leaving another breathing corpse on the ground behind her. Lurien noted the unspoken deference to his leadership. Niel fell in to take second place behind him. Even Namariel forfeited the opportunity to comment on how competently he had handled the killing of an unarmed leper. It had been the charge against the Alfrostan, he decided. They'd all started to treat him differently after the retreat from the Isurian Cape. He could get used to it. Taking extraordinary care to avoid touching the walls, Lurien moved to the end of the lane. The ether sea protected them, but even the ocean's primordial magic was not total proof against the corruptions of Nurgle. It was said of the Chaos Guards that they preceded even the precursor stuff of the realms themselves.
And true, the six Eidoneth were caked in as pestilential a set of disguises as any that could have been prepared ahead of time.
"I can feel the dirt moving under my feet," said Eodraine.
"It's not dirt," said Filinduil.
Eodraine looked down and swore quietly.
"You could have stayed on the beach with Moragai and Uriel," said Namariel.
"I would not have it,"
said Eodraine, dragging his gaze from the scuttling carpet of dung beetles and roaches.
"Spoken like a true Archelian," said Niel.
Eodraine mimed the Elgonite's words to his back. Lurien suppressed a grin. At the end of the row of dung-heap hovels, he peered out. More downtrodden townsfolk shuffled about an enclosure that resembled something between a low market and a public latrine, busying themselves with degrading and, as far as Lurien could discern, pointless tasks, carting filth, huddling into small misbegotten groups to moan and sway, smearing the walls of the buildings with fresh ordure. Flies crawled over them, up noses, out of mouths. The corners of their eyes glistened with egg clutches. Their bodies were covered in sores, visible where the rags they wore rotted off their backs.
"Why do they continue?"
Eodraine whispered. "Why not just die?"
"They've lost the hope of something better," said Namariel. "Even in death."
The Namatai regarded the abjects strangely, not in sympathy, but perhaps with empathy.
"Then they deserve their lot," said Eodraine.
"Perhaps a year or two of slavery would alleviate your contempt."
Eodraine sneered, but wisely said nothing. Lurien frowned over the motley of wretches in the square. He'd never given much thought to the morality of what the Eidoneth did in order to survive as a species. It was possible to lament the measures demanded of them by their curse and still conduct the pillage of mortal souls with no more remorse than a human would feel over eating meat, or an auroch about making war. Many did. His dispute with Galra here had been over how much and how often, rather than whether the extension of their own children's lives at the expense of others was just. The thought had simply never occurred. It did not exactly occur now, but for the first time, faced with the broken existence of these hollow creatures, Lurien wondered if the grim necessity of the Eidoneth's actions could ever be considered merciful, an endeavour to which even Teclis might wish his forsaken children well. High notions of mercy, however, fled far from reach as the elves moved into the square. Lurien pushed his knife in between another woman's shoulder blades, a victim and a mode of execution that he was finding infinitely preferable to the dispatch of auroch warriors from the front. With a fleetness that even an experienced human warrior in the prime of health would have struggled to match, he dropped his victim and took another. With equally swift lethality, Niel and Eodraine fanned out to either side, silently killing as they went. Those men and women out of immediate reach felt the effects of Filinduil's glamours. Mouths drooped, eyes widened. But whatever melancholy or despair the Tidecaster was able to project from his own soul, the wretched vassals of Nurgle had already suffered 100-fold. More than a few shrugged off the elf's magic to stumble away. Their shuffling was slow, even by human standards, and certainly not enough for them to be counted amongst the handful of the mortal realm's creatures who could outrun Namariel's whisperbow. Kalar did not even wait for the first body to fall before entering the square. The soul render selected her victims as a truess would triage her patients. Those nearest to death were the first to receive the mercy of her talon hook, and only one perished before she reached the man's side to claim his soul. It was a measure of the number that her lure light had already claimed that losing one to the Garden of Nurgle did not even warrant a frown. She was still tearing the light from the eyes of those few that Filinduil's glamours had managed to incapacitate when another dozen mortals entered the square. They looked at the elves in shock, for they came not with weapons, but with pushcarts, presumably to drag away the dead to some spiritual site of decomposition. The Deepkin claimed them as well. Eadren looked almost giddy with their glut. Lurien wafted his knife through the air until the steady renewal of the ether sea that sheathed him cleansed the blade.
"What is our tally, Selrender?"
300, she said, "including those souls taken from the Kip."
"Such riches," said Nael.
"You will be fated overall," said Kayla.
Nael grinned and bowed his head to her. Lurien regarded the pair sourly.
"There's no need to be glum, cousin," said Nael. "Whatever conditions Laramie has given for her support, know that I care not. You will have my support against the Falglave. We are family. We will fight for your throne together, as Lagithe and Laramie once did."
Lurien's eyebrows climbed. He was not sure if Nael truly understood what he was offering. And yet when the prince offered his sword, victory somehow seemed possible.
"Someone is coming," Namariel hissed.
"Good," said Eodrain, sounding almost drunk on success. "More souls to claim."
"Quiet," said Felinduil.
Some resonance in his voice made even Eodrain shut his mouth and pay heed. The pupils of the Tidecaster's eyes were like oceans, his mind swimming through the adjoining streets.
"It is no dung worshipper or leper than Amata senses this time. We should hide."
Lurien nodded, though everyone was already obeying the Tidecaster, drawing themselves under sagging eaves or back into the mouth of the alley they had come from. Felinduil muttered something under his breath, and Lurien felt the deadening chill of an obfuscation hex trickle through his body. The Ideneth had been hiding from gods and mortals alike since their creation. They were good at it. Lurien could no longer see another elf in the square himself by the time he heard what Namariel already had. Footsteps. Not the squelch of bared feet and excrement, but the armoured trudge of warriors. Though he knew that Felenduel's magic made caution unnecessary, he slunk further back towards the edges of the square all the same. A company of putrid knights crossed into the space. Various ancestral colours still clung to their armour, but the ochre and dun heraldries of lichen and mould mottled their war gear now. The metal was buckled where bloat and corrosion had distended the plates, writhing maggots and loops of entrail extruding through the gaps. Their spines were twisted, hips outturned, breath gurgling from ruined, half-warped visors, and yet even the largest race of humans would have called them giants. Lurien had fought orcs and revelled in the grace and power that his elven heritage held over them. And yet whatever fell power invested these unholy champions, it whispered to its lurking counterpart in Lurien that for all their plodding mien, he would enjoy no such advantage here. Something touched his shoulder, and he almost screamed. But it was only Namariel, half seen behind obscuring magic. He wanted to ask her what she was thinking, moving about. But glamour or no glamour, he dared not speak. The knights ignored the dead. Corpses presumably were commonplace in Coriza, and the warriors traipsed past Lurien's hiding place, heading in the direction of the harbour. Somewhere beyond the miasma in that direction, warning bells were tolling. Lurien pressed a palm to his breastplate, marvelling at the insane racing of his heart, panic, excitement, and dread all working it at once. A grin stretched his face to loathsome dimensions as he watched the knights of Nurgle depart. The reaping of mortal souls had been the aspect of the plan he had sold to Prince Nael, but it was not the only one, nor even the most important. With any luck, the maggot-kin would not suspect that their bilge fleet was sinking due to an alopex chewing their hulls from below. Not until it was too late. Lurien could not wait to hear of Vanglaer's reaction when the great raid lord learned that the true king of Briandar had not only had the boldness to strike at Coryza, but had drowned the Gulch Empress's dreaded fleet in the process. Kaelar emerged from their obfuscation first, seawater breaking over her armour as she stepped from the far side of the square. Lurien looked up as his party reappeared one by one. He frowned.
"Where is Prince Nael?"
The five Idoneth looked around them, but the square was empty now, save for bodies, still but for the scuttling of beetles and flies, and the ragged breathing of the dung walls themselves. There was no sign anywhere of the White Prince.
"Could he have gone somewhere?" said Éodrain.
"Alone?" said Lurien.
"Knowing we could not follow?"
Felindwil's lips pursed as he fixed his bushy-eyed gaze on Éodrain.
"The last I saw, he was standing by you."
"I did not see him," said Éodrain. "I could not see any of you."
He pointed a trembling finger at the Tidecaster.
"Do not throw accusations at me, Tidecaster. More likely it was your spell that swallowed him."
Felindwil sighed.
"That is not how the power of Mathland works."
"Did you see where he went?" said Lurien.
"Teclis himself could not have followed him," said Felindwil.
"Well then,"
said Éodrain, crossing his arms over his breastplate.
"You are shaking," said Lurien.
"What is this place? The sky is too bright and the air is too warm. Everything makes a noise, and I can't touch anything without feeling something."
"Calm down," said Lurien.
"Then stop accusing me."
"We cannot tarry here," said Namariel.
Lurien's eyes narrowed as he turned to the Nomartai.
"You found me,"
he said. "Even through Philendule's obfuscation, I felt you walk up behind me."
"I suppose it is possible,"
said Philendule.
"Namartai have many senses that we do not."
"Teclis himself," Éodrain sneered.
"I was there beside you, my love," said Namariel. "There is no way I could have followed Nael as well."
"We are not leaving without Prince Nael,"
said Kayla. She brandished her talon hook.
"Or his soul. Should the worst have befallen him?"
"We cannot wait," Namariel murmured. "The sinking ships will distract the Blight Kings for a time, but when the harbour yields no obvious culprit, they will come back to search the town."
"She is right," said Éodrain.
"As is Kayla," said Lurien.
"I need him. If I am to win over Laramie and take the fight to Vanglaer, then I need him." No sooner had he spoken than a horn blared from the sodden heap of plague furnaces and castles that scabbed the cliffs overlooking the harbour. It moaned across the sagging roofs of the old town, its dolorous monotone aguing limbs, blocking noses and clouding eyes. Lurien took a wobbling pace back, as though his trouser legs were stuffed with eels. He squelched a hand into the wall of a filth hovel to keep himself from falling. The purity of his gauntlets seemed the least of his woes now. Éodrain put his hands over his ears and groaned.
"The Gulch Empress,"
Lurien breathed.
"Lurien,"
said Kayla.
"Lurien,"
said Namariel. Cotton wool ears meant he barely heard them.
"We go,"
he hissed.
"What of Prince Nael?"
said Kayla.
"He knows where the ocean is."
Kayla turned the cold metal of her covered face towards him.
"And if he is gone?"
Lurien hesitated over his answer. He could just about face informing Laramie Farseer that her heir had fallen in a scheme of his instigation, but telling her that Nael's soul was now a plaything of Nurgle with which to torment his eternal rival in the Dark Pantheon was a conversation he did not want to have. He almost turned back, only for another vitiating blast of the horn to settle the issue. Wiping a stream of mucus from his top lip, he backed towards the alley.
"Mathlan protects,"
he muttered, and then ran.
Down rot-sodden streets they sprinted, Lurien leading, retracing their steps. Felenduil struggling at the rear until Eodraine dropped back to help the old Isharan move. The Archelian grimaced in distaste as he took the old elf's arm across his shoulder, but even he knew better than to try to flee this place without their tidecaster. The fetid labyrinth of alleyways was largely deserted, for Lurien and his party had passed this way once before, but even so, the call of the Empress's horn summoned a steady dribble of pitiable souls from their homes and into Coriza's streets. They died quickly, quietly, Namariel's arrows through their eyes, Ethersea filling up their mouths so that they clawed the earth in silence as they drowned, or even on occasion with Lurien's knife slashing across their throats. It was neither quickly nor quietly enough. And the next time the horn sounded, Lurien was certain that it was closer. The maggot kin must have found the breadcrumb trail of dead they had left behind them. Namariel's arrows, perhaps. A corpse had suddenly become a cause for suspicion. Their eyes were red and their joints swollen, their lungs crackling with the onset of disease. By the time the elves reached the battlemented heap of steaming feculums over which they had entered.
"There is no time to climb over,"
Lurien wheezed.
"Can we dig through?" said Kalar.
The colour drained from Lurien's face at the thought. Dragging Felenduil along beside him, Eodraine joined them.
"What are we all still doing here?"
"Unhand me now, Archelian," said Felenduil.
Eodraine gladly let go, and the Tidecaster lent his weight fully into his staff. Robes billowed in phantom swells as he drew the tides of magic towards him. His eyes rippled like rock pools in an earthquake. Waves ran the length of his staff. Lurien and Kalar dropped back from the wall just as the Tidecaster unleashed a wave that demolished a 20-foot-wide section of it. Sodden lumps splatted as they rained out. Mutated worms with tiny horns and boil-encrusted segments wriggling and drowning in the mud smear that the Tidecaster's magic had left of the wall. Eodraine caught him again as he let go of his staff and slumped.
"Felenduil,"
said Lurien.
I think he's dead," said Eodraine.
"He is not dead," said Kalar.
Disdain for the Archelian seeped through the solid metal of her helm.
"But he has extended himself over far."
"Then how do we get out of here?"
said Lurien. A heavily armoured boot squelched into the torrid filth behind them, and every elf bar one spun to see. Namariel put two swift arrows through the scabrous helmet of a pox knight, one through a jelly-like grill and another through an eye slit. White fluid dribbled from the protruding shafts, but the warrior strode purposefully on, failing to react even to the impact force of a near point-blank shot to the head.
"We could try running again,"
said Eodraine.
"Go,"
said Lurien, and before he knew what he was doing, rammed his hell-sabre into the horror's breast. Armour crumbled from the golden blade, the revealed skin giving a hideous flutter like a coral polyp vomiting up befouled water. The stench almost knocked Lurien down. He stared a moment at the oozing sore, stricken, as the diseased warrior head-butted him to the floor. He skidded almost 10 feet through a slippery concoction of seawater and filth. Namariel vaulted over him and into a crouch, and another arrow sprouted from the Blight King's groin.
"Defend the prince!"
she cried. In furious silence, Kalar charged the Blight King, staving in squamous flesh and mouldy armour with crushing blows from her talon hook. The giant's warped soul flexed and rippled under the onslaught, but it had already been forfeited to another and was beyond all but the mightiest of soul renders to tear free now. Shaking off the fever spreading through his skull, Lurien staggered back to his feet. He tightened his grip on his sword, then looked down at his empty hand as he realized that his hell-sabre was still sticking out of the Blight King's heart.
"How is he even still moving?"
The warrior parried Kalar's talon hook with the haft of its axe, then kneed her in the chest. The force of the blow flipped the soul render over and sent her sprawling to the ground on her back. Slipping and stumbling towards Eodraine, who had been dragging the unconscious Felenduil back into the breach, Lurien reached across and drew his retainer's sword. Raising the weapon in weary salute, he took a haggard breath and turned back and charged. The Blight King gurgled up yellow pus as it blocked Lurien's blow with its axe. The chain links of the knight's vambrace rattled, loose flesh rippling like liquid. The might of the warrior's arm was irresistible, and Lurien let his sword go where it was pushed. Pivoting on the balls of his feet, he ducked the knight's arm and saw the blue zircon pommel of his hellsaber where it protruded from the Blight King's heart. He grabbed it. The Blight King chuckled, noxious air blowing over Lurien's arms from the rips in its chest, and hacked back with his axe. The knight's body turned with the blow, and keeping a tight grip on his hellsaber, Lurien turned with it, his legs flailing out behind him. The axe shaved his pauldron, and the pox knight gargled in apparent amusement as the torque finally ripped Lurien and the hellsaber from his chest and sent them both sprawling across the filth-strewn ground. Lurien slithered back, staggered, twinned swords raised defensively as fat-clogged and plague-blackened arteries spilled from the Blight King's split chest. They twitched along the ground like maggots wriggling unerringly towards Lurien's feet. He stamped on a clutch of entrails, a tendrilous residue sticking to the bottom of his boot as he lifted his foot. He made a face.
"My prince!"
Namariel grabbed him by the shoulders and began pulling him back.
"Help Kayla!" he said. "The souls she has taken have to make it back to Elgaen, or all of this is for nothing."
"Without you, there is nothing."
"I said, help Kayla!"
With a hiss of annoyance, the Namatai let go and ran to the Soulrender's side. Kayla was already back on her feet, but similarly beset by worming tendrils of the Blight King's animated viscera.
"Go!" Lurien told her. "Join the Morsar and Ishlane in the bay. Swim back to Elgaen."
"That will take weeks."
"Better that than risk the souls we have taken. We will lure them to the far end of the bay and take our chances there." "Laramie will learn of what you did here. Go!"
The Blight King issued a wet chuckle as Kalar spun away and fled into the city for the harbour. He fixed his ruined gaze on Lurien and Namariel.
"My empress knew there was something on the oceans of the gulch, and we few, but forever faithful, never doubted. The progression of Nurgle's rot to her brain grants her wisdom beyond the grasp of common folk."
Humming the first foul note of a dirge, the Blight King hewed at Lurien with his axe. Lurien countered with a sword in each hand. Skillful, beautiful to behold, he did not doubt, but absolutely no match for the Pox Knight's tireless power.
"Time to go,"
said Namariel, pointing to where an entire cohort of Blight Kings was advancing through the city, less the crashing wave of an Archelian charge than a river of slurry, promising a death that would be slow in the coming, but no less inevitable for that. Her arrows raked the block of Pox Knights as she sought and failed to slow them down. Lurien began to back away, only for a loop of connective tissue to worm around his wrist and drag him back into the Blight King's clutches. The metal of his gauntlet began to blacken.
"Ho, ho, ho, no, no, no,"
said the Blight King.
"Lie down and die."
Lurien swept his sword through the string of cartilage, only for another to wrap around his thigh, another around his waist. "His other wrist," he grunted, trapped.
"I envy you,"
said the Blight King.
"Truly, you are going to learn the great truth of acceptance, a truth I learned 100 years ago.
The sticky tendrils began to reel Lurien in, as if the Nurglite meant to absorb the Idoneth Prince into his chest. Lurien fought. The Blight King chuckled. Something leapt onto its back. With a strangled cry, as though its own battle rage was something perverse, the attacker stabbed at the back of the Pox Knight's head. Sludgy blood and black pus sprayed everywhere. The Blight King swung back with his axe and missed. He wobbled for a moment, stubbornly upright, axe flailing in a loop as his attacker cracked through his skull and began butchering his brain. Finally, the knight keeled over backwards, his tendrils dragging Lurien down with him. He hit the warrior's soft armoured corpse with a squelch, quickly fighting his way free with a look of horror on his face. A familiar face looked down at him.
Moragai? He said, what are you doing here?
The Namatai cleaned her knife on the trembling bubble of ether sea enveloping her fingers. She did not answer.
No time for that now, Namariel screamed. Run!
One look at the coming wedge of Blight Kings convinced Lurien she was right. She grabbed his wrist and he let her drag him. They ran. The breached wall opened out onto a scrub of oily grasses on the clifftop overlooking the beach. The wind grabbed at Lurien's cloak, a blind infant searching for something it knew it desired but would not recognize if it found. The stench of decomposing seaweed rose off the water, Nurgle's gifts of wastage and decay overcoming even the power of the ocean to purify. Eodraine and Felenduil were ahead of them, but not far, the former encumbered by the barely conscious weight of the latter. They were heading towards the beachhead, hidden amidst the bluffs a few miles further up the cove, where the Namatai battalion waited with Ureel and Lurien had thought at Moragai. He glanced at the seamstress come assassin beside him. She scrambled over the bare rocks as though a native to them, moving almost on all fours. There was no time to dwell on her unexpected presence just then, however. They had a long way to run yet, but provided Eodraine's strength held out and Filenduil did not fade any further, they were still moving faster than the Blight Kings. They could make it. The plague horn sounded again, and this time it could not have been more than 200 feet behind them. Lurien felt his entire body weaken. Muscles faltered with the wastage of a long illness. Arteries hardened. Will failed. Namariel cried out, and even Moragai found her voice to scream a name Lurien did not know as she clawed at her ears. Eodraine crashed to the ground ahead of them. Felenduil rolled to the cliff edge before managing to arrest his fall, shaking his head as if confused to find that he had just awoken to his own nightmare. Another blast of the horn tore wails from them all. Lurien flopped to his knees as the bones of his legs became jelly. The ground shuddered under a titanic footstep, and Felenduil cried out as the cliff edge beneath him crumbled. Lurien turned to look back. His innards turned to water. The Gulch Empress of Coriza pressed her horn into the gloopy flesh of her gut and hefted a sledgehammer. Its haft was as long as 3 elves arranged hedge to foot in a line were tall. The head was a boulder engraved with seeping runes, black tentacles wriggling from its mass. Lurien looked up as she stepped over her Blight Kings. Carivinia the Great was a gargant. Her skin was the black of putrefying meat, her belly a mountain of bloat where liquefying fat drooled from the summit. Bare and withered breasts hung to either side of her paunch, pierced with hellish icons and encrusted with fungal diseases. Infected tattoos spiralled around her massive arms. She was armoured only to her thighs, and that was as high as most warriors could reach. A patchwork of leather and metal, wood and shell. One thigh plate was a still-living human man nailed to the frame of a door, a fecal smear running over the knee joint. The tortured harness creaked, rattled, groaned as the Gulch Empress took another thudding step towards the stricken elves. Lurien screamed. Namariel struggled for the strength to draw back her bowstring, only to fumble the arrow between her fingers and watch it clatter away over the cliff edge. Moragai crawled determinedly towards Eodraine and Felenduil.
Machili will Archaon praise me for this,
Carivinia bellowed, her voice the bursting of gas-filled corpses and the snapping of bones.
And when he is finished, the grandfather will reward me with the degradation of elf flesh.
The saggy folds of her face slipped and slid into a lopsided grin as she sank her free hand into a loin pouch and drew a pearl-inlaid object that, size for size, looked like a stylus in the hand of a scribe. She hurled it towards Lurien, and as the object grew in size, he realized it was the plague-ravaged body of an elf. Prince Nael. Lurien tried to move himself out of the way, but his arms and legs had become lodestones and refused to respond as the Elganite's corpse smashed to the ground at his feet. The body burst like a water balloon filled with mud, flesh already thinned, tissue softened by Coriza's mark of decay. Muddy brown fluids sprayed from the joins in his nacreous warplate as his corpse tumbled towards the cliff edge, bones rattling about inside, Lurien and Namariel screaming as they were doused in the rancid fetor of their prince. Lurien struggled to lift his sword, only for its weight to bear him to the ground instead. Caravinia's presence was a thing of power, the smallest piece of a godly footprint on the mortal realms. And this was a mere servant of Archaon. Never had Lurien felt so naked in the face of his true place in the cosmic hierarchy of powers. Never had he understood what the term fell power truly meant, or the might to which the true paragons of order and chaos could lay claim. His ambitions were as nothing in the grand pageantry of the gods, or of the titans that served their designs as champions. He had been a fool to think the backing of a warrior as mortal and limited as Nael would have been enough to win him even as far as his limited imagination had conceived. This was the horror that awaited the kings and queens of the Green Gulch. They could hide from it, as they had for millennia, but their enemies had not been looking. They looked now. It was only a matter of time before the likes of Caravinia and her patrons found them. He understood in some enfeebled place that remembered, reasoned thought, that his retreat into the arms of inevitability was the work of the Empress. But even so, he could not find the strength to resist it. Easier to just lie down. Accept it. There was an angry hiss, and a string of arrows puckered the Gargant's naked chest. The individual shafts were barely discernible against the Empress's own coarse hairs, but it was enough of a distraction that Lurien felt the malaise in his body lessen.
Joyful day!
Caravinia bellowed as Nael's reavers drew back bowstrings to loose again. Uriel hurled a javelin with a roar. It smacked into the Gargant's cuisse and stood there quivering.
More virgin fields for the grandfather to plant his seeds.
The ground trembled as the Gargant waded into the reavers. Lurien heard screams. Ignored for the moment, he crawled towards Nael's body. At full stretch, he caught hold of an ankle and then half-dragged the corpse towards him, half-pulled himself on towards it.
Namariel, he called out. Help me move this!
Leave it, the Namatai shouted back. It is a dead shell already.
It is a dead shell wearing a king's ransom in Elganite pearl.
He tugged furiously on the corpse's leg, and when it became clear that he was not leaving without it, Namariel came to take the other leg, while Eodren lifted the head. Moragai remained to assist Filenduil. Lurien turned his sore and aching neck to where the tidecaster clung to the ground. He had recently vomited and was staring at the watery results in amazement and horror.
"Get us out of here, tidecaster," he said.
"Impossible,"
Filenduil said. The Gulch Empress shook with mirth as she stamped on a reaver.
"I will drive the stormcast back," she cried,
a hammer emitting a squalid drone as it obliterated another elf from the waist up.
"My rot will spread through the bowers of the Everqueen. I will tear out the roots of her war groves and plant the seeds of decay in their foulsome glades." "Tidecaster!"
Lurien cried. Filenduil stared at his hands.
"I have lost my staff, and my strength is... Elgin is too far."
"Then cast us somewhere nearer, anywhere!"
Caravinia's cries grew fevered with laughter. Lurien closed his eyes, hugging Nael's corpse tight to his chest as he felt the ether sea that sheathed him, quavering before the champion's corruption.
"Anywhere!"